Hello there, thanks for joining us. It's the Sweet Spot. Bruce Millington and Steve Palmer from the Racing Post chatting all things golf. We've got three tournaments to look ahead to this week. And also we'll look back on last weekend. First of all though, Steve, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Bruce. The tonsillitis is gone. My neck has returned to normal size.
Oh, good. Was that just nature did that, or did you?
I'm quite encouraged. I didn't take any drugs. I think maybe my system's getting used to having it, and the old glands are the key to everything, aren't they?
They certainly are. Did the golf provide a tonic, a fillip, or did it sort of almost threaten to extend your malaise?
Well, I was very hopeful for John Rahm for a long spell, and then he got off to a horror start on Sunday. Missed a couple of tiddlers early on. Didn't get to grips with the pace of the greens all weekend, really. John Rahm teased me, but quite a lot of pain.
Oh, well, OK, well, we'll stick with the CJ Cup for the first part of our review of last week. And Rory McIlroy, I mean, what a year he's had, hasn't he? I think, Steve, there's been a few times in recent years where we've kind of doubted Rory's ability to ever get back to the very top table. Well, I certainly have, and others have. You might have kept the faith. But he's had a stellar year, isn't he? Not just brilliant golf and winning, but being a real kind of talisman and a poster boy for the PGA Tour. I mean, I think it's been fantastic. I'd like to shake his hand and buy him a glass of ale, wouldn't you?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, he's a fine young man, isn't he? And he's back where he belongs, you know, arguably. I've always felt he's the best player of his generation. You know, Jack Nicklaus was the best player of his generation. Tiger Woods was the best player of his generation. Much harder to identify the best player of this generation. But I've always angled towards McIlroy. He's the closest we've had to an outstanding, you know, generational talent. So, I like seeing him as number one. I find it very soothing, and I'm glad he's got back there.
It was a terrific performance, wasn't it? I know he bogeyed the last two, but he had it wrapped up by then, didn't he?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't vintage McIlroy. In round three, he had the hooks coming home. He had a little bit of luck at the end of round three. There was one hook that got sort of swatted back into play by a palmetto tree. I thought he'd lost his swing coming home, but then he came out the gates well on the Sunday. The fifth hole was crucial for me. Did you see the fifth hole? My wife and kids went away to Brighton for the weekend, so I literally watched every shot of every golf tournament. It was just like the I don't know how to call them, the good old days. The wife doesn't like that, but it was like the old days. Yeah. I didn't miss a shot on any tournament. Just slumped on the sofa, and the fifth hole, Rory McIlroy. He just got over the water. He was inches away from a double bogey, and then he played his second shot from the reeds, scrambled a par from the reeds. That could have been a real showstopper, but he got the par, and then. Yeah, he went from strength to strength from there, didn't he?
So were you at home all weekend? Did you leave the dwelling?
I literally stayed in. Domino's pizza on the dial there. It did remind me of how I used to live. Yeah. Whether it was a good life or a bad life.
I think every so often is not bad, is it?
Every so often, yeah. I agree with you.
Oh, well, anything else to report from the CJ Cup? The one thing I would say, Steve, is that, and it's a general point, this, you talk about, you know, having the hooks, and there was another time on Sunday where I think he hooked one into trouble. Isn't it amazing how often when you see the shot tracker and it veers off to some alarming angle, left or right, and they just they so often get out of trouble, don't they? The next time you see them, they've got a beautiful lie and a path to the green. You're like, that never happens to me. I end up behind a rake or, you know, in some deer poo or something. It's just like, I never get the breaks. Why do they always get the breaks? Not fair, is it?
It did seem to happen a lot last week. Yeah, there were times when McIlroy's tee shots were going left, and I was, as a John Rahm supporter last week, I was getting very excited. And as you say, I mean, mate, these palmetto trees, mate, yeah, they talk about trees being 90% air, don't they? I think the palmetto trees might be 95% air because, they did seem to be getting lots of breaks. But, it wasn't vintage McIlroy, but he didn't need to be because a lot of the other big names were really off their game, weren't they? Yeah, your Scottie Scheffler's, your Justin Thomas's. But it's great to see him back at number one. Yeah, Taylor Montgomery's the other one to mention. It was so annoying how late he took to get going. He outscored the field by three shots on Sunday. He shot 62. I think Taylor Montgomery finished 13th last week. He's just consistently on the leaderboard. Keep him on your radar.
I thought Katayama played well as well. It was interesting what the commentator said. What the commentator said about him having played with Rahm. I can't remember when it was, but he said he learned a lot from Rahm. I think they played together one weekend when Rahm won, and he said he learned about how to conduct yourself when you're in contention. And I thought he hung around very well, didn't he?
Yeah, he did hang around surprisingly well, because he's got huge technical flaws in his swing, isn't he? I mean, you're waiting for that one to just to fly out to the right. He comes in so late on the board, isn't he? He's always got
all
a slice.
Good to me.
He's always got a slice to the right waiting. So yeah, Kitayama's not on my radar, but Rory definitely is, and Montgomery definitely is.
Okay, and over in Mallorca, what was he called? Something Paul, Yannick Paul, wasn't it? I mean, it's quite a short price, a bit of a new name to me. Tell me about Yannick Paul.
25-1 chance. Yeah, Yannick Paul, decent ball striker. As he said in his interview during the final round, he's a good ball striker and a seemingly appalling putter. Some of his putting early on Sunday was terrible, but the fact there was a little bit more breeze about helped him. But I mean, Yannick Paul, I just can't join in this big celebration of Yannick Paul victory. You know, yeah, Ince was interviewing him afterwards and it was all so jolly. And,
it was a controversial incident, wasn't it?
Left a big sour taste in my mouth. Yeah. Just outrageous conduct on that 17th hole on Sunday. It was glossed over a bit amid all the Marcus Armitage drama. Did you see Marcus Armitage?
I know Armitage got himself into all sorts of a pickle. He didn't get a good lie, did he? No.
No, he missed a tiddler on the 16th with the tournament at his mercy, and they made a complete horlicks of the 17th. But on that 17th hole, playing alongside him was Yannick Paul, who hooked his drive.
Oh, he was up against the wall, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was up against the wall, and roving reporter John Morgan, who I love, was doing his best to describe what was happening. It was jammed up against the wall to the left of the rough, and you know, Yannick Paul has got a referee over. So it's an unplayable lie for a right-hander. He's got a referee over and he said, oh, I'm going to play it left-handed. So, you know, to play it left-handed, even if he made contact, it would just have gone scuttling along there into trouble with trees ahead of him. There was no left-handed shot that would have been productive. But the referee had no choice because he's saying, I'm playing it left-handed. So then his feet are then on the cart path for a left-handed shot. So he got relief from the cart path. He's moved his ball away from the wall because his feet are on the cart path for a left-handed shot. That is, I didn't like that. And then
that's the rules' fault, though, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, some players have got to have some sort of, you know, integrity, haven't they? Because he had no issue. He had no interest in playing a left-handed shot, in my opinion. And so then he gets the relief, and then he goes, right, I'm a right-hander again. So then his feet are on the cart path again for the right-handed shot. So he gets another little bit of another free drops. Yeah, that was nowhere near as important as the first one. But to cut a long story short, his second shot from being up against the wall on the left, he's able to project it 165 yards to the fairway.
I know, yeah. No, that's crazy. He did hold a really nice putt from just off the 18th green to seal the deal, didn't he?
Well, he did, but if that was to stay in the hunt rather than to win it, you know, would he have rolled it with as much credit? It left me pining for Wayne Riley. We haven't seen Wayne Riley for a while.
Wayne Riley wouldn't have stood for that. I think Wayne Riley would have probably would have intervened, I think, and said to ref, no way, mate, can't do that.
He certainly would have got heavily involved, and he would have been talking about it for ages, whereas John Morgan, he's the nicest bloke in the world, and he said, When Morgan's ball went into a divot in the fairway, his second shot went 165 yards, but then it went in a divot. He goes, oh, he's got his just desserts there. He's got his just desserts. You know, he was angry, but John Morgan's too nice to linger on it, whereas I think Riley would have just kept banging on about it. I've got nothing against Yannick Paul personally. You know, I'm not talking from my pocket because it didn't affect me in that way. If he'd beaten Hurley Long by a shot, then I probably would be.
Yeah.
I'll be camped outside his house now demanding answers.
You think the refs have got to be a little bit less kind of sappy about this? You know, come on, get a grip, man. Just say, no, there's no way in the world you would have played that left.
Yeah, I agree.
I'm not having that.
I agree, because all the talk is, oh, you make the rules work for yourself. But there is an element of ungentlemanly conduct that comes in, isn't there?
Well, yeah.
For me, that was ungentlemanly conduct. And, what I would say on the matter, just I don't want to linger too much on this. We've got three.
I think you do.
We've got three golf tournaments this week. But what I will say is, you know, Yannick Paul is going to have to live with that now. And, you know, he's got the trophy
he
at home.
Care. He won't care.
Well, you say that. You know, over time, when the dust has settled, I remember being at an Open many moons ago. And I was propping up a bar in the north of England. I can't exactly remember where it was. And to the left of me were two well-established European Tour caddies. No one else would have recognised them. I knew who they were. I recognised them. So I looked in the opposite direction, pretended I wasn't listening to their conversation. They were gassing away. They'd had a few sherbets. I was listening intently to every word they were saying. and they started talking about a player who had gone through a similar situation than this. I won't name the player because I don't want to get involved in any potential litigation. But they were talking about an incident during a tournament where a player did something questionable rules-wise. And the caddy, one of these caddies was caddying for that fella at the time. He said, "Are you going to be able to," he just whispered to him, "are you going to be able to live with this?" It just got me thinking on Sunday, whether Yannick Paul in time, when he's talking to his kids about his European Tour victory, this fella I'm talking about in this story has got one European Tour victory. So when he's sitting his grandkids down, does his heart sink? Does he hate himself? I just wonder whether Yannick Paul will have that feeling. You want to win cleanly, don't you?
I don't think they care. I think they're so up themselves, most of these golfers. They're so intent on winning. They don't care. They absolutely ride roughshod through the rule book whenever it suits them. But on a brighter note, we must take our hat off again for the second week running to Wilco, our colleague, who obviously had the double while you were away two weeks ago. And then last week in the RFO, he was super subbing for Joe Champion in the Racing Football Outlook. And he tipped McIlroy and Paul. I mean, just incredible. He's had the double 2 weeks running. So well done, Wilco.
That's an easy game, isn't it?
If only.
I'm pleased for Wilco. I'm not pleased for Yannick Paul. I can't be pleased for Yannick Paul.
Okay, mate. Fair enough. Let's move forward now. Get that out of your system, yeah? Like the tonsillitis. Are you over it now?
Yeah, I'm over it, yeah.
Good. Right, we've got three tournaments this week. We've got the Portugal Masters. We've got the Bermuda Championship. We've got some very weird thing called the Live Golf Team Championship. Which one should we start with?
I think we should start with the Portugal Masters.
Okay, I will start off then by reading you the best prices, or indicative prices rather. Shop around as ever for best prices and best place terms. And then Steve will tell us all about the venue and then tell us who he fancies. Right then, Robert McIntyre, 14-1. I'm always a bit uneasy about Bobby McIntyre. Do you think, is he just Bobby?
And had a drink with him, you can't call him Bobby.
14-1, Robert McIntyre, favourite. 16-1, Jordan Smith. 18, Victor Perez. 20, Antoine Rosner. 20, Nikolai Højgaard. 22, Yannick Paul. 25, Eddie Pepperell. 28, Matt Wallace and Andy Sullivan. And 30, Torbjörn Nelson. 35, Barr. Steve, we're down on the beautiful Algarve this week, aren't we?
Yes, the Dom Pedro Victoria Golf Course, Vilamoura, Portugal, 7,191 yards, par 71, 3 par 5s. It's hosted since 2007, a flat, exposed track, similar in style to the venues found on the golf swing of the DP World Tour. Wide fairways, massive greens, sets up really well for big hitters. There's lots of corners that they can cut. And the European Tour's only round of 59 came on this track, Mr. Oliver Fisher.
Nice. Good weather forecast.
Yeah. Another birdie
Clement,
fest.
Is it?
Another birdie fest, yeah, in the beautiful Algarve. I actually drove past this. Well, my taxi drove past this golf course on my way back from to the airport the other day. They always get good weather around here.
Brilliant. How many selections have you got, Steve? How many?
Four. I don't want to tempt fate with this.
No, you don't want to bring the tonsillitis back, do you?
You could start a coughing fit if I get too carried away. I don't want to get...
I did need to confirm. It wasn't that clear there. But yeah, I got the gist. Okay, right then. Without further ado, who's your main selection?
Andy Sullivan, 28-1. I think Andy Sullivan's going to win this Portugal Masters for a second time. He didn't just win it in 2015. He won it by 9 shots. God. And he nearly defended the title in 2016. Podrick Harrington beat him by a shot. He was 8th in 2019. We know he loves this track. He's an attacking player. He's traditionally been an excellent putter. He's well suited to low scoring assignments. His 4th DP World Tour title came in 2020 with a 27 under par total at Hanbury Manor. And from what we've seen from Sullivan in the last 3 months, he's ready to rip the Dom Pedro apart again. 8th place in the Kazoo Classic was a sign that Sullivan was getting his act together again. And he was 3rd in the Kazoo Open. He set the early pace in the BMW PGA at Wentworth. 11th in the Andalusia Masters and 16th last week in the Mallorca Open. Had a very frustrating week on the greens, but his swing is in great nick at the moment. He's working his way back to top form, and I'm expecting big things. He was actually playing in front of me the other day at Wentworth.
Was he really?
Wow. He skipped the Spanish Open to practice at Wentworth. He was in the group of front. He was doing some very noisy swearing, actually. But it was happy swearing. You know what I mean?
Wow.
You can tell he was happy. He's got his A game back. He's a chirpy Midland.
He is, isn't he? Yeah, he'd be a nice guy to have some tinctures with, I think, wouldn't he?
He would. If you don't mind.
Did you see him in the bar afterwards at Wentworth?
No. Didn't go in the bar afterwards, but yeah. He seemed in really good fettle.
Good.
And yeah, I'm expecting huge things from him this week. I think he's the best golf bet of the week.
Wow. Okay, then, who, if it's not going to be Sullivan, who might it be?
It might be Thorbjørn Olesen at 30-1, who's another player who seems to be rounding into top form in the last few weeks. Olesen had that big moment in May when he got his career right back on track in the British Masters. All the doom and gloom of the previous 2 years, it suddenly disappeared. He finished that tournament like a champion. He's a six-time DP World Tour winner. There was an understandable lull afterwards, you know, such an emotional victory. But he's been really solid again recently. His driving went off the radar for a bit, but he finished 20th in the French Open a month ago, 21st in the Andalusia Masters last time out. You can't drive badly to compete at the Golf Nacional and Valderrama. So he's got it under control again. He's back in business. I fancy to make loads of birdies at the Dom Pedro. I want attacking players who typically putt well. Thunder Bear fits that criteria.
Okay, third in.
Whackham Lagergren, 40-1. A mercurial talent, literally goes from the sublime to the ridiculous. When he's good, he's amazing. When he's bad, I'd fancy my chances against him. He's the sort of player that you wouldn't give a prayer of doing well at Valderrama. Yet there he was, finishing runner-up to Adrian Ottaviani last time out. Lagergren finished 23rd in the Spanish Open before that, and second at Valderrama. He's suddenly looking like a danger man again. I feel compelled to have him in the staking plan for a course which suits him much better. You know, Lagergren, all guns blazing. His career's been built on magical putting. He's finished 14th and third in his last two Portugal Masters starts.
Nice one. And finally,
Gavin Green, 45-1, completing a team of ultra-aggressive birdie machines. Green's career took a little bit of a dip. He had some injury problems. He was missing home. Touring life was getting to him. But like Sullivan, the last 3 months have been really encouraging. He's played eight events in that time. He's made every cut. He was runner-up in the Czech Masters. He was 11th in the Mallorca Open last week. Very well suited to the Dom Pedro. He was 17th there last year. So, yeah, I think he's going to go close to a maiden European Tour title.
smashing. Anything else to add on this, or should we move on?
No, four-pronged attack. Four-pronged attack, and then we move on to a trickier tournament, I'd say.
And that is the Bermuda Championship, for which Denny McCarthy is 16 to 1. So no star names this week. 18, Thomas Detry, 22, Seamus Power, 22, Mark Hubbard, 25, Nick Hardy and Aaron Rye, and also Adrian Meronk, 28, Justin Lower, 28, Patrick Rogers, 30, SH Kim, 33, Bar those. It's kind of the second and third tiers of the European Tour and the US Tour meeting here. It's a funny old field, isn't it? Sometimes with these ones, Steve, when the stars stay away, there's a really good bet jumps out at you. Is that the case this time or not particularly?
I'm going with outsiders. Yeah, I don't want to be backing anyone particularly short in this, given the weather forecast.
Oh, is it windy? It always seems to be windy in Bermuda. Is it windy or wet?
Very windy, yeah. Wet first day and then 3 windy days following that. Sunday particularly windy.
Disruptively so, potential Monday
No, I don't
finish.
think so. No, I don't think so. No, they're used to this. I mean, if you remember, I'd always like to test your memory. Last Sunday of this event, brutal winds. Lucas Herbert battling with Patrick Reed and Taylor Pendrith. It was quite a thrilling denouement. And I think we're going to get a very similar Sunday.
Righty ho, how many? Oh no, we better get the course guide before we get the selections, haven't we?
Port Royal Golf Course, Southampton, Bermuda, 6,828 yards, par
Where's
71, three.
Tiddler?
Yeah. Three par fives. It's hosted the Bermuda Championship 3 times, 2019, 2020, 2021. Generous fairways, large greens. Wind is the big defence. It would be a doddle without the wind, but the wind's always there.
Okay, fair enough. How many tips?
Five. Big prizes.
Five. Okay, brilliant. Here we go with the headliner.
The headliner is 66-1, Garrick Higgo. I couldn't believe the price of Higgo when the opening shows came out. He's been punted into 66-1. This is a 23-year-old who still has huge scope for improvement. He's already won 3 DP World Tour titles. Two of them came in the Canary Islands. He's back for more island golf this week. He's one of hardly any players in this rubbish field with a recent PGA Tour victory to his name. He's got a recent PGA Tour victory to his name. Yeah, it was only June last year he was winning the Palmetto Championship at Congaree, which staged the CJ Cup
Oh,
last
yeah.
week. Higo has shown his bottle at every level. He won 2 Sunshine Tour events before starting his DP World Tour career. 2022, has not gone to plan. He's had some injury problems. He's been missing loads of cuts. But the Sanderson Farms Championship at the start of this month was really encouraging. You know, it seemed to signal a return to form. For, you know, the old Higo came back and he finished third. He was beaten by only one shot. So if Higo's getting back to his best, massive threat in a low grade this week. He played in the Bermuda Championship last year, finished 34th. Only two players outscored him in round three. So, yeah, I'm going to take my chance on Higo. I want good putters on my side this week. The three winners of this tournament, exceptional putters. Brendan Todd, Brian Gay, Lucas Herbert. You've got big, large, undulating greens. And Higo fits the bill.
Excellent, mate. A very strong case for him. Who's the second tip?
It's Robbie Shelton. Sweet spot regular Robbie Shelton at 40-1. He finished his Korn Ferry Tour career in style. He won twice last year. Most recently in the middle of August, propelled himself back onto the PGA Tour. I don't expect him to drop back down to the Korn Ferry Tour. He made a very confident start to this PGA Tour season. He was 21st in the Fortinet Championship, 61st in the Sanderson Farms, 15th last time out in the Shriners. Another fantastic putter. These large greens will hold no fears for him. He missed the cut in 2019 on his only previous Bermuda start, but now 3 years ago, he's a lot more polished now.
Okay, next up.
Brandon Wu, 50-1. Accurate, tidy player, putts well, great amateur career. Won the Korn Ferry Tour Championship in 2020. He'd missed four cuts in a row prior to making his Bermuda Championship debut last year, but he finished 34th. He then finished third in the Puerto Rico Open in March. He likes island golf. All his record by the coast is fantastic. He was second behind John Rahm in the Mexico Open in May. He was sixth in the Scottish Open in July, high-class event. He was eighth in the Wyndham in August. He keeps popping up occasionally to remind everyone how good he is. I haven't forgotten. This is a 25-year-old with a big future.
Okay, brilliant. And that's B Woo. There is also a D Woo in the field, so make sure you get the right one. Okay, who we got next?
Good point. Good point. Two more at the biggest prices. Kramer Hickok at 80-1. A born and bred Texan, still lives there, ultra comfortable in the wind. Sunday's going to be a battle. Hickok has got the accuracy and the ability in the wind to deal with it. He's shown a liking for this assignment in the three previous editions. His form figures are 15, 8, 30. He's got some good form in the Sony Open in Hawaii. He's got some good form in the Corrales Punta Cana Championship in the Dominican Republic. This is the sort of test that brings out the best in Kramer Hickok. He's won twice on the Canadian Tour. He's won once on the Korn Ferry Tour. If he's going to win on the PGA Tour, then Port Royal is a great opportunity for him. You must remember his battle with Harris English last year for the Travelers Championship. Epic playoff. Eight-hole playoff, was it? I can't remember. Eight or
was
nine.
It really? Eight,
yeah,
nine.
Yeah, yeah. And then Harris just pipped him. But yeah, Kramer, we've been Kramer Hickok fans since then, and we still are.
Okay, who's the, hang on a sec, I'll give you a chance to have a little glug there. Who's the fifth and final selection?
Oh, blimey. A little belch. Oh. One of those.
Oh, no, don't do that.
Sorry about that. Yo, edit the belch out, please. And the final one is a 200-1 chance. Harrison Endicott. Oh. We had a young Aussie victorious in the last Bermuda Championship, Lucas Herbert. Maybe we'll get another one here. Harrison Endicott has got a PGA Tour card in his pocket. He's loving life. He won on the Korn Ferry Tour last year by five shots in May. Then on his PGA Tour debut in the Fortinet Championship, he finished 12th, which was a fantastic effort because he cracked his driver early in the week. By the time he got his driver sorted on Saturday, he shot 65, rocketed up the leaderboard. He's got an early check in the bank there to settle him down on the PGA Tour. Yeah, we all know how good Australians are on the wind. You know, every Australian's a fantastic wind player.
And all Spanish players have got good hands, haven't they?
That's it. And Harrison Endicott is going to thrive in these conditions, and 200-1 is massive.
Okay, excellent. I see John Daly gets a place this week.
It's great to see. Yeah, great to see.
Yeah, lovely to see.
Sponsors invite. The sponsors have been, I'm really impressed with the sponsors. They've invited John Daly, they've invited Adrian Moronk. They've had a lot.
Yeah, that's great, isn't it? Okay, Steve, let's turn our attention to the third tournament this week, and you'll have to do some explaining here because it's the LIV Golf Team Championship in Miami. I've saw some prices. Basically, it's these silly teams they've been representing. How many are there of them? There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 12 teams of four. These are indicative prices. 19-10, four aces. 15-4 crushers, 4 fireballs, 17-2. Come on, it's not interesting, is it?
It's interesting if you're a high roller. I mean, I think there'd be a lot of high rollers looking at this tournament thinking, blimey, Yeah, I haven't got to do much to get my team over the line here. I mean, you've got byes for the first round. Can I guide you through? I'm more excited.
We need
than you.
Format. Go on. Get me into this. We need the format.
You want that's format first. Yeah. Okay, format. So 12 teams of four playing for $50 million. $16 million goes to the winning team. So there's $4 million for each member of the winning team. The top four seeded teams do not have to play on the Friday, so they get byes into to Saturday. That's the four aces, crushers, fireballs and stinger. The other eight teams each play a match on Friday, quarterfinals, if you will. So four teams will get knocked out on Friday. The matches consist of two singles and one alternate shot match. Then on Saturday, the remaining eight teams have a match each. Same deal, two singles and one alternate shot match. Then we'll have four teams left for Sunday. Are you still there, Bruce?
Not really. No, I don't care. Viewers might, so carry on.
We'll have four teams left for Sunday, which is becomes a stroke play event. So all players play conventional stroke play. Total team score counts.
Right, okay. What's the bet?
If you've got any questions.
No, I haven't got any questions. Apart from, have you got a tip?
Yes, I have a tip. You've actually, on my screen, you've frozen in a really sort of horrific pose. I hope the viewers haven't got that same one.
Blimey, hopefully not.
So angry. So I'll try and block that out. So you don't want to know about the course. I mean, we're going
I don't care. What's the tip?
The tip is four aces at 2-1. Four aces. There's reasons for believing that is a great price. This is the team of Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Taylor Gooch, and Pat Perez. They have won four of the six team events so far. You know, there's team events that run alongside the individual event in LIV Golf. So they've got a 66% strike rate in the normal format with 11 other teams to beat each week. This week, they get a bye through Friday's play. So there'll be only seven other teams against them by the time the four aces tee up. As number one seed, I forgot to mention this, as number one seed, they get to pick who they play on the Saturday. So they can shamelessly pick the crappiest team left in the event. Maybe the Niblicks will sneak through round one and they can go up against the Niblicks. But that's a lovely edge to have. Whoever they play, you'd fancy him to progress. You've got to win at least two of your three matches to go through. So Dustin Johnson and Patrick Reed can play the singles matches. You'd expect them to beat anyone they play in the singles. Then on Sunday, they've just got three teams to beat in the stroke play. And they've been beating 11 teams on a regular basis. I expect them to prevail. I want to talk about the venue, if I may. Trump National Doral Golf Club, the famous Blue Monster, 7,545 yards. Jill Hant remodeled that track in 2014. So the best course form for punters to go for is the 2014, 2015 and 2016 WGC Cadillac Championships. And the four aces performed superbly in those events. All right. There's been three PGA Tour events at Doral since it was redesigned by Jill Hant. And the winners of those three events, Patrick Reed, Dustin Johnson and Adam Scott. Adam Scott's not a LIV golfer. So the two winners at the Modern Doral are in the Four Aces team. They've both been playing great. Reed was second in Bangkok a few weeks ago. Taylor Gooch, he joined LIV Golf in his prime. He's been consistently good too. The weak link in the lineup is Pat Perez, obviously. He'll happily admit that. But he can be hidden away in the foursomes on Saturday, so he's only in half of the shots. Then on Sunday, he can be ultra defensive. He's great mates with his captain, Dustin Johnson. They'll have a little chat. And Pat Perez will understand his role. Just keep the big numbers off your scorecard. Play for the middle of the fairway. Play for the fat of the green. Get as many pars as you can. Then leave it to
Johnson, Reed, and Gooch. I've heard enough. I don't care. I don't like LIV. And this is just absolute nonsense. But anyway, I do respect your enthusiasm for it, Steve. And I wish you all the best with that tip, okay?
Well, I tell you, we'll be enthusiastic about it. It'd be Pat Perez. You know, the chance to win $4 million. He's going to knuckle down and he's going to play disciplined golf.
I'm not Alan Sugar, where he goes, that's it, I've had enough. I'm not interested. I've heard it all now. I'm going to make my decision. So anyway, let's reiterate the tips this week. Portugal Masters.
Andy Sullivan, Thorbjørn Olesen, Wacom Lagergren, Gavin Green.
Bermuda Championship.
Garrick Higo, Robbie Shelton, Brandon Wu, Kramer Hickok, Harrison Endicott.
LIV Golf Team Championship in Miami.
Four aces.
Brilliant. Okay, Steve, thank you very much. What's the week hold?
Halloween at the weekend, isn't it? So,
Haven't Weymouth got a big FA Cup tie coming up as well?
5th of November, fireworks night. Yeah, there's going to be fireworks. Yeah, AFC Wimbledon are in all sorts of trouble. They're coming to They're coming to the Bob Lucas Stadium. So, we're in the first round proper. I couldn't be more excited.
Are you going to that?
Oh, yeah, wild horses wouldn't keep me away. Yeah, first time in 15 years we've made the first round of the FA Cup.
Is it a televised event?
Sadly not. Unbelievably, they found other more attractive ties in. I don't see it. Yeah, Wimbledon won the FA Cup.
Exactly.
They should be showing that fixture.
They should, shouldn't they? Oh, well, that'll be good. And then you've got Halloween in between times, have you?
Yes. Sunday's Halloween, I think, isn't it? So, yeah, hopefully we can give the bookmakers a fright on Sunday and then give the general public a fright as well. It's so off-putting not being able to see. You could be doing
Steve.
Could be giving me the bird.
I'm smiling sweetly at you. When you see the actual show, you'll realise. But no, that is very queer, isn't it? That's very off-putting, presumably. But you've held it together very well, Steve. So well done. Jack will be back with Steve next week to look at the Mayakoba Championship and the Toto Japan Classic. I'm back in 2 weeks. Good luck with your golf bets. Have a great week. Hope you can join the lads for another sweet spot next week.